You've been through pre-Cana, maybe you've even said, I do, and now what? Welcome to After Cana, a podcast for young couples looking to make it until death do they part. In each episode, we'll share sage wisdom and practical advice from couples who've been married for 20 plus years. My name is Gabby Quinlan, and today I'm sitting with two special people. Would you guys mind introducing yourselves?
Kim Sattler.
And Jeff Sattler.
So Kim and Jeff, we're so excited to have you on. Let's just jump right in. Tell me a little bit about yourselves, where you're from, and then we'll get into your love story.
Okay. I grew up in South Louisiana and went to school and to learn X-ray technology. So oh, wow. I worked that for a year, and then I switched. You still need to know about X-ray to do. So I became a cardiovascular tech. So I did that until we were married, till we had our first child. So, and
I grew up in oil country, gas country, actually in northwest New Mexico. Went to school in Colorado, and my first job was in the town where my soon-to-be bride lived and had been raised. And so as it turned out, the lady that was our departmental secretary was good friends with Kim's mother.
Oh, okay.
And so we provided the model for today's dating app. They just called it a blind date at the time.
I love that. So, okay, so you got set up. How did the date go?
The first date was disastrous.
Really? Oh my gosh. Okay, you got to tell me about it.
Jeff didn't speak very much, and I'm really not the communicator of the family. But that night, I kept having to think of things to talk to him about, and then he fell asleep on the way home.
No.
It was a double date. And so the other couple were driving, and he does know how to dance. So we went to dinner and then we went dancing, and I was really glad that we were dancing, because the music was so loud that I didn't have to worry about what I was going to talk to him about anymore. So we danced and that was fun. But when he fell asleep on the way home, I thought, this is a dud. I cannot. So, and I think he was embarrassed too. So he didn't ask me out anymore. And I was glad, because I was just like, oh no. Well, another thing about him is that he's very blind, and he needed these Coke bottle glass. The style back then was, these black frame Coke bottle glasses. And it was like, I can't even see if he has eyes. Those glasses were so, it was kind of like, I was just not attracted to him, and he wasn't talking and he fell asleep. It was like a disastrous.
The trifecta.
So then I was glad he didn't call me, and I was still living in a home, and at that age, I was 22, and that's what you did in South Louisiana. You stayed living with your parents till you got married. And my mom was nervous, because all my girlfriends did get married by the time they were 20. And here I was 22. So my mother was nervous. And so she worked at the same plant as him and her best friend from high school. And so she said, look, they're having a family picnic. Why don't you come? There'll be some eligible young men there that you could meet. Well, Jeff was there, and he didn't have his Coke bottle glasses on. Mm. And he was playing volleyball and talking with people and having fun and laughing. So I thought, Mom, maybe you should tell Veronica that I don't think I gave Jeff a fair chance, and that I'd like to go out with him again. So she did. And he waited a whole month to ask me out.
Oh my gosh.
so we joked that it was love at second sight.
Oh yes. So that's That's the best. Oh my gosh. I love that. What's your perspective on this story?
I'm Jeff? Glad you asked, because I was getting ready to say.
I knew there had to be two sides, you know.
Well, my thought was, when I first saw her, now this is a blind date back in the day. Really, we couldn't go to, you know, Facebook or whatever, do any homework, right? So mm-hmm. here I am. I meet her for the first time, and she is so outstandingly beautiful. I'm thinking to myself, man, I hit the lottery. And I thought, then I thought to myself, you know, every other guy and his brother has probably dated this or wanted to date this fine woman. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'll just play hard to get.
Oh, that was the strategy.
That was the strategy. And, you know, it wasn't really that well developed the first time, you know, but especially when I got the second one, yeah, I was embarrassed. You know, I mean, she lived between two train tracks, and going over the first set of tracks woke me up.
And oh my gosh.
Then you try to, you know, act like that didn't happen. So, anyway, then when the later time said, well, Veronica, or my secretary said, oh, there's somebody that would like to go out with you. I said, oh yeah, who's that? Is she good looking? She said, well, you should know. You went out with her. And I'm thinking, oh, now's the hard to get kind of ideas kicking in, right? So I went full Monty on the hard to get, and said, wait a month, and then kind of be casual about the whole thing. And it worked.
Wow. And look at you, 44 years later almost. Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
We'll leave it to the listeners to figure out whose perspective is more believable.
I like them both. It's like completing two sides, you know. That's awesome. Okay, so how long did you guys date then? And what was your kind of dating experience like?
So after that first date, it was a very good first date. We went dancing.
Okay, yes.
And I don't know how to dance, but he said, just follow me. And he said, I'll hug you tight and you'll know which way to go. So that's what happened. And I seemed to catch on. And but then he dipped me. Mm-hmm. And our faces were like this. And he kept holding me down, like, you know, looking at me straight. And I was like, I already knew I liked him the second time when we're already out. So I kissed him.
Oh.
And so then.
That was a defensive kiss now.
Right. She said, I can't go anywhere but kiss you, you know.
So then he. We were talking a lot, both of us, and having a good time dancing, because we went country western dancing and I had never done that.
Oh, and so fun.
So it was good. And then so he dropped me off, and I just was feeling bad that I had kissed him. That's just so forward for me. It was, but I just was in a situation that I didn't know what else to do. It was like, maybe that's what he wanted me to do. And so then, you know, I thought, he didn't say anything about getting my, he already had my phone number, so I didn't need to worry about that. But he didn't call me all week.
Oh.
And then he called me on Friday.
Strategy looks better, doesn't it?
So, hard to get.
So then he called me probably on Friday for a Saturday date.
Okay.
Said nice. Yes. And then that was a great date. And then we went out weekly.
That's great.
You know, and then we started seeing, we were living in the same town, so we started seeing each other every day.
Mm.
And then he told me that he had a bet with a colleague of his. The colleague initiated the bet. He said, I bet you $100 that you're going to be married to Kim within the year. Mm-hmm. And Jeff took up the bet. And we went visit this guy, and that's how I found out about the bet. And because the guy told me in front of Jeff, and I had the gumption. I said, Jeff's gonna lose that bet.
Oh,
I just said, Jeff's gonna lose that bet. because I could tell that he loved me. And so, within 3 months, he asked me to marry him.
Oh,
but without a ring.
Okay.
Gotcha. So I didn't call it counts until, you know, I got a ring. So that was August. And so then he had proposed in March.
Okay.
And we got married the following August. So it was within a year.
A sweet $100 right there.
Well, that was my wedding gift from the guy.
I love it. And a beautiful bride, right?
That's best of all. Mm-hmm. I tell people, and they talk about your life story, I say, tell the people the part where, well, I moved to Louisiana, and that's where I have my most prized asset.
And you know, our kids, when they hear our story and how quickly we got married, They said, it's just against all of y'all's rules. I said, no, this is the thing. We were both finished school and had jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw each other every day, you know, till we got married. And it was like, you really get to know a lot about a person if you're seeing them every day.
True.
You know, one day, if they're in a bad mood or whatever, how they're going to treat you. And if they're, but, you know, we were so happy that we really didn't have any bad days until after we were married.
And this is a small town too. So I don't know, 5,000 people or something like that. So it's not like there's tons of distractions. And so most of the time I'd just go over to her house and we'd chat. And
we walk around the block, or we'd go, you know, do unusual things, like a river went through our town, and they had to open the locks one time. So we went, you know, watch them open the locks and see the water gushing into the, and just, you know, or ride bikes, or there was nothing to do in that town. So you didn't want to go to the city every day.
Yeah,
you know?
That was half an hour one way. So it's not like we were anxious to just spend all the time riding the roads, huh?
And sometimes I would cook things for him so that he would know that I know how to cook.
That's a great strategy. Oh my gosh. I think that was one of me and my husband's first couple dates. I was like, come over to my dorm. I'll make you this pasta dish. And I think he was sold from then on. But the cooking, it's the way to their hearts for sure. So then... once you got married, what was your first year of marriage like?
Well, I think the big event was we had taken a natural family planning course.
Mm-hmm.
Although retrospectively, it was kind of a catch-all sort of a thing by a midwife who was knowledgeable about parts of it, but it was a bit of an amalgamation of several different methods.
Okay.
And so we went into marriage committed to use natural family planning. And so we turned up pregnant after the first month. And so I think in my own mind, I saw how upset she was, and I felt like I needed to pay. Go ahead.
It's not that I didn't want children. I just thought maybe, you know, we would, NFP would provide maybe 3 months of not having children, because we wanted children. We had already discussed, you know, that we discussed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we wanted children, but since we had discussed it together, I knew that, you know, he wanted to wait, you know, a couple of months or, and when I got pregnant, I was like, oh no, he's going to be so upset.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just expectations are not met. It's hard to take that news, you know?
So when I told him, he acted so excited.
Oh,
just so happy that he acted excited. And, you know, it wasn't until about maybe 10 years later that he told me that he was upset too. But he
really,
when he saw how upset I was, he didn't want to, you know, he said, I didn't want to hurt you that way.
Oh,
so I said, well, I'm so glad you chose to do it that way, because I think it would have crushed me to know that you were upset too.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good husband right there.
But then even after that, you know, after we had our child and probably he was a year old, our friends would say, y'all look like y'all are just so devoted and to being good parents that what did y'all do before y'all had children? And I said, I really don't remember what we did. You know, we just, I mean, not like we had hobbies or, well, he'd like to do sports and I was crafty, but I said, we do love being parents. So.
And I would hardly recommend to people now to have babies soon after you get married, because when you stop and think about it, the idea of participating in creating a new being, a new life, is something that's unique in both for the parents, for the baby, and in that time. And so it's one of those things that if you think about it at all, which surprisingly maybe some people don't, but it's such a divine blessing. Mm-hmm. And provides a very unitive aspect to the marriage. You know, this is our kid, your kid, my kid, you know, a very irreplaceable, one-off, one-of-a-kind thing. And it's just wonderful.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think you don't realize how great of a blessing it is until you have that. And then your whole life is transformed and you see, you know, more of your spouse in the world, which is a really beautiful thing.
You get out of yourself and you, this person is so important. This person is so important, you know, that you want to give your best to them. And
yeah, absolutely. It's very sanctifying for sure. Well, that's beautiful. So having children young and starting your family maybe before you expected, what was the kind of transition like, you know, having multiple children and figuring out, you know, your own relationship and also your parenting relationship with your kids?
Well, the easiest kind of, once you get past two, you have to get to the idea of a zone defense instead of man-to-man. So anybody that plays basketball can kind of sort that one out, right?
Right. You're outnumbered, so you gotta.
And I think it's, you know, generally speaking, there's a hesitation to have more than two, maybe three at the outside, because they look at the first and all the attention, energy, and so forth that is put into the first and go, you know, I can't do this times four. Mm-hmm. It's just too much. Well, it's not. It's different. And the whole idea of a family and, you know, the older ones can help the younger ones in surprising different ways, too. And so we were always big on allowing them opportunities and having them do chores to help in ways. So for the longest time we had, for example, all the plates and cups in the bottom cabinets so the kids could unload the dishwasher.
Nice.
As opposed to put something up high.
Yeah, they can learn things quickly, like, you know, folding washcloths or, matching socks.
Mm.
So we start getting them, involved and tell them how good a job they did. And then for us to stay united, I realized early on after the kids that we were so busy taking care of, you know, meals and childcare and that we weren't talking very much once he got home from work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So after he put them to bed, I was always exhausted and when we would go straight to bed, I just kind of felt like I needed more than just physical intimacy. Mm-hmm. From him. So somebody, I don't know who it was, but somebody else said that what has really helped their marriage was that before they went into the bedroom, that they maybe share some wine or just talk for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Make 20 minutes every day looking at each other. Back then there wasn't phones, cell phones. So, turn off the TV and look at each other and talk.
Yeah.
And then sometime, I mean, and then during that time, we also were encouraged by some friends to go to Marriage Encounter. I said, well, why do we need to go to Marriage Encounter? We don't really have any serious problems. And she said, oh, it'll make your marriage so much better. And so we really didn't go right when she asked. We probably went after 10 years. And something we learned there was to write. If you can't seem to express your feelings orally to each other, or you feel you're interrupted by your spouse or whatever, to write a letter, saying how you feel. And
I love that.
Or take a topic that you just want to talk about, you know, patience or time together, how you spend your time together or whatever. You write a letter and he write a letter, and then you switch the letters. And then you can discuss the letters. And I thought that was helpful. We did that probably for 10 years.
Yeah.
And
that's great. That's a great idea.
Well, one of the handicaps I have, I ended up in sales in a technical arena. And one of the attributes for a good salesperson, I think, is to be able to respond to people's objections and in a quick way. And so, as somebody told me one time, is something that is your best asset in one area can be your biggest handicap in another. And so being able to process information quickly and come up with a response is a very negative trait in family life, both with your spouse and with your children. You know, one of our kids will come up and say, hey, Dad, can I do so-and-so? And, you know, you can think about it for about a nanosecond and say, that's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. Well, you know, the kid just doesn't really have a sense that I gave any consideration to it when, you know, it's obvious as a nose on your face. But that's not really effective as a parenting technique, because they just don't feel like they're got any brain cells engaged on my part.
Huh? Got it. Yeah.
And I think that also applies in conversations with my wife. And it's like, okay, well, the answer's obvious. Well, she's laying out a problem doesn't necessarily mean she wants help with the solution. It could well mean that she's been home all day. She hasn't had an adult conversation all day long, and needs to think it through while she's speaking. So
when he started, just listening and not trying to solve my problem, I felt his concern for me, or his just attentive listening. So it really made a big difference then.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about kids is that you must get out of yourself. You know, I've talked to people that were getting ready to be married, and then you say, well, are you looking forward to that? Well, you know, I think it's probably going to be pretty much the same as it is since we've been dating for however long. It's like, well, dude, if you think it's going to be the same, call it off now.
You're in for it.
It's just not going to work out to be the same as what it is now.
Yeah.
And then you take kids and additional kids on that, and it's a whole different level of focus away from yourself. And now you've got all these other people that you need to worry about and take care of. And if you're self-centered, I just can't imagine a situation where that can really work out in a positive way over the long haul. And it's easy to be busy, right? So you can do stuff. And today we've got even more distractions with, you know, internet-related tools.
Absolutely.
People are like, oh, okay, well, you know, I just look at Facebook for whatever. You know, yeah, I don't have Facebook and I don't miss it. And
yeah, you're not missing much.
what people say is, you know, there's good things. Oh yeah, so-and-so was, you know, went to on this or whatever, but to spend hours, you know, I can see how it's addictive, right? So just don't start. And then you have children, and each of the children are doing what they're doing, and you want to participate in that, but not to forget, take care of your wife. Take your wife first, pay attention to her, be considerate, spend time with her. And those are all things that you have to make a point to do, or it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So a lot of that means, your hobbies, I don't have, quote, time for myself, you hear people say. Well, that's not a mandate, huh?
Yeah, that's so true. I think, yeah, I really like what you guys said about taking like intentional 20 minutes. And when you were talking about Facebook and technology and how life is so busy and crazy, I was thinking about how, I don't know if you see on your phone, it shows you how much you've been on your phone that day, like your screen time for the week. And it's always kind of a scary number, a scary amount of minutes. One of our other guests we had on the podcast mentioned that 1% of your day is only 15 minutes, right? But you spend hours and hours on social media. You can't spend 15 minutes with your spouse, connecting with them or connecting with your kids at the end of the day, then, you know, your priorities are pretty mixed up. And I think a lot of people battle with that, and a lot of people seek the connection with their spouse, but they're just so engrossed in what they're doing on their phone that they can't get that connection. And so I think that that's such a good point, that listening, looking at each other face to face, and really, really prioritizing that connection is so key in building a lasting relationship that's not only lasting but happy and thriving. So,
well, and I think the key word for me that you said is prioritization. If people understand, when that, you know, how many times do you ask somebody, well, do you fill in the blank, and say, oh, I'm too busy for that. Well,
right. Okay.
What you should reply, I told a number of people, is that's not a high enough priority for you to do.
Yeah.
They say, oh yeah, well, you know, when's the last time you prayed? Oh, you know, I pray on Sundays or whatever. And say, well, you ought to try to do some every day. My schedule's too, well, it's other things are more important. If you analyze your day on a 5-minute interval or whatever, and you say, well, I'm going to choose to check out sports scores, or, you know, one guy's saying, well, I look at the my college football team's recruiting status, or, you know, progress or what have you. And it's like, okay, well, that for you at that moment, that's the most important thing you do.
Mm-hmm.
Is that that a reality that you want to deal with? Huh? Well, yeah, I guess it's not that important. Good point. You know,
true. Yeah, that's yeah, I completely agree. Oh my gosh. Hard to find the balance, but you got to find it, you know?
Yeah. And it's a battle. It's going to be a struggle that you don't want to give that struggle up. You want to keep trying to have, you know, find the balance
to do better,
to do better.
Absolutely.
Tune in next time to hear the rest of our conversation with Kim and Jeff Sattler. Thanks for joining us for this episode of After Cana. If you enjoyed listening, share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review, or visit us at ferrisloveshrine.org.